So I got Corey, Alexi, and Erica here. We're all friends of Frank Moore. But first, let's just start off. Would somebody just tell us who Frank Moore was and why it matters?
Come on.
All right.
Here they go pointing at each other.
Come on.
Well, Frank was a performance artist, a writer, a broadcaster. He had been doing stuff for over 40 years, I mean, in a variety of mediums, and he said what was behind all of it was to further human liberation on, you know, kind of on all levels, in all forms. Specifically, he did, you know, performance art pieces that always involved the audience and created kind of an altered state where people could feel a closeness that was generally not part of the normal social relations. Community, he was always about community in all forms. We connected with Gerald through Frank did broadcasting on the internet starting in 98, 99. He had an internet radio station called Love Underground Visionary Revolution that he created as he always saw it as a pipeline to give access to give people access for viewpoints, music, poetry, things that were locked out of the normal framework of, you know, of media or even just people's expectations of life. And it was, you know, non-commercial, non-profit. Anybody could have a voice on there.
I could read a little bit from his description of Lover. Lover is the Love Underground Visionary Revolution was the web station. He wrote, "Yep. Lover is very dangerous to the powers that suppress people. We are taking our cultures, our music, our web, our freedoms back into our communal human family. We simply reject the fragmentation, isolation, ownership, and the worship of profit. We people together are dangerous. Love, passion, and simple, unlimited fun are dangerous. So they will come after Lover, will try to shut us down, gag us, and they might succeed for a while. But until they do come after us, we will be here spinning dreams, and we will just go deeper underground when they come for us. Hey, we are Love Underground Visionary Revolution."
All right. Well, now that there you go. I'm in the details. Get real specific. Where I connected with Lover was, I think, when Tracy and I had a radio program called Slave Revolt. We used to give you guys tapes, and he'd play them on Lover.com. And I really appreciated that. And from that, we started to develop a relationship where we got to know each other better. I got to see, you know, all of what Frank was into. And I want to just say this. Frank was disabled. What do you call this disabled thing?
He was born with cerebral palsy.
He had cerebral palsy. So he was somewhat paralyzed. He couldn't walk. And he couldn't really talk. But this is what got me. I went over to his house, and he had like a pointer affixed to his head through a band. And on the table, he had a set of letters and words. And even though he couldn't talk, he would point at these letters, and this guy was running a conversation. And I'm looking at him, and I'm saying, well, I'll be goddamn. Now, what excuse do you have for not doing the right? Look at this guy. And I found him personally just enormously inspiring. I said, well, you know what? It's great to be alive. Look at this man. If he can do this, Gerald, you can do better. And he made me want to do better, to be honest with you. And we just became friends over a long period of time. And we wound up, you know, doing other things together. He actually, here again, he is intelligent. He approached Berkeley. The city of Berkeley has a television cable television station that operates out of Berkeley High.
That's right. Yeah.
And here he is. Frank took advantage of that. He went in there. He got some training. They interviewed people on television. And I'm talking about all kinds of stuff. Anything you can imagine. He was pretty much an open book in that way. To allow people in a society where, in fact, there is all kinds of censorship. And when I say censorship, I mean not, you know, things that you don't get to see. Things that you don't get to hear. That's a form of censorship, too. What these editors and program directors for these news programs write in their papers or put on the radio or on the television is a form of censorship. Because they don't just tell the news as it happens. They think about what they want you to hear. And watching this guy operate, only, I tell you, it just made me feel good. But let's continue.
Come on.
Well,
let her get in there. You done came. You're going to say something.
Well, you can talk about the book.
Oh.
Okay, now, there's a book. So take a minute, tell our listeners about the book. You know, because we're on the air right now. So just tell them what you feel, what you know. And you might want to share a couple of pieces with us, please.
So I'm Erica. I'm Frank's student, and so are Corey and Alexi. And Frank passed away in October, and we continue to live our lives in the way that Frank taught us how to live. He taught us how to love each other and how to get things done. So we have published a book of Frank's called Frankly Speaking. It just came out, a collection of essays, writings, and rants.
Who published it?
We did.
Oh, that's
we did.
That's a handsome job. Wow.
Mikey did the, you know, the layout.
Who is this? Interrelations.
Yeah, that's us.
That's the nonprofit. And then we're having an event.
You gonna speak up? But look here, Interrelations presents, Frankly Speaking, a book party and celebration of the life and work of the iconic Bay Area cultural pioneer and well-known radical shaman, performance artist, Frank Moore. You know, it seems like it's so much to say, but there really is so much to say because dude was active. He was doing stuff. Frank Moore, all right. So come and get turned on by words, ideas, concepts expanding beyond the normal frames of art, performance, sex, magic, and life in general. 300 pages of mind-blowing shit. This will take place Thursday, March 27th, 2014, from 7 to 9. It is absolutely free, and it's going to be at Modern Times Bookstore Collective. And that now, they've had to move several times. So get this address now. The Modern Times Bookstore is now located at 2919 24th Street in San Francisco between Florida Street and Alabama Street. This is somewhat, I would say, a result of this gentrification that's taking place because they used to be right on Valencia. It was much easier to find them. And it's a bookstore that's been around since I came to the Bay Area. It is becoming increasingly difficult for independent bookstores to keep their doors open when you have Barnes & Nobles. Who else? Another one of these mall Borders and on and on and on. These huge chains, they set up, they run everybody out of business, and then they don't make all the books available. So, for instance, I have a friend. Well, I'm not going to get into Bob Wells's, but it's hard to get a publisher these days. It's really hard. So I can see why they self-published. Once again, the address, Modern Times Bookstore Collective, 2919 24th Street in San Francisco, between Florida Street and Alabama Street. And if you can go to their website by just going to moderntimesbookstore.com. The phone number of the bookstore is area code 415-282-9246. Come on. I ain't gonna let you go. Everybody got to say something.
Well, I could read something from the book.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Corey's going to read something. I'm going to get something out of you. You ain't. This is a participatory sport here.
You want to read?
No, Tegan.
Erica could read.
Uh-oh, here he come. But go ahead, read that.
Well, you could start there. That's the first page.
This is the first page of the book. From Frankly Speaking, a collection of essays, writings, and rants by Frank Moore. Warning! Enter at your own risk. This piece may be threatening to your everyday reality. This piece may cause questioning of the common morality. These symptoms may appear days after the piece without warning. Even if during the piece you may feel as if nothing is happening, or you may even enjoy it. But above symptoms may still appear, leading to restlessness and even to radical change. Enter. And this is the first poem on the second page. And within ourselves, we have been digging through the ages, underground passages, linking passions together. When we reach to touch one another, the bars melt like butter. We sing together in the words that the masters can't understand. We create together, dream, imagine together. We hope and make love together behind the dam in evolution. Frank Moore from the poem Locked In, Locked Out.
Mm-hmm. All right, now I got to tell y'all, I ain't much on the poetry thing, but no, personally, but I know a thing of beauty when I hear it. So, you know, this is very interesting. Corey, why don't you share a couple of pieces that you think really stand out?
Okay. Well, anyway, just so people know, if they want are interested in this book, they can go to aeroplay.com/frankly speaking. That's aeroplay.com/frankly speaking, all one word. And you can get a lot of information about how to get the book. Let's see. There was a piece that I had picked out. This is Frank talking about art. He wrote a lot about art. This is from The Art of Breaking Taboos, from December of 1991. And it's toward the end of the piece. So he's talking about his history of doing art and performance and how he broke taboos of form and time and style. He said, but what I did was made much more, quote, sensitive and subversive because of the artistic environment of performance in the late 70s, shifting into personal monologues about the normal reality, instead of creating an alternative experience of reality, shifting back onto the theatrical stage. Directors of galleries and theaters started telling me they were not booking me at their spaces because they are personally afraid of the audience participation, the extended time, and or the trance experience. I always thought this is a valid, honest reason for not booking me. These directors often voted for my work when they were on committees for venues other than their own. But some galleries step over the line into looking at both the artist and the art as a packaged commodity by telling the artist what changes have to be made in the art, in form, style, content, subject, time, to make the art suitable for the gallery. This assumes the artist has a choice or the power to mold the art. This is a basic misunderstanding of the process of creating art. As a person, I have always needed to break out of personal and physical isolation. To do this, I need to bring other people into an altered reality, to play in an expanded/extended, quote, sexuality. All the forms and contents of the art flow uncontrolled from this depth of need. I am sure this is true of all good artists who are drawn into taboo areas. We do not see what we do as, quote, dealing with sensitive issues, but as things we must do.
Now that's an interesting concept. I have to wrap my head around that. Because, unfortunately, being an American citizen, you look at things the way, you know, you've, and so, you know, art is looked at in this country as a commodity. So you got a picture, how much? You know, oh, well, too much. Well, I'll just get a print, you know. So, you know, so it's like, it's always looking at it as something that is sold for money. And thus, we don't talk about the philosophy of art very much, art and literature. And I'm kind of glad that not everyone produces their literature, for instance, simply because of considerations of money. Because where would we be then? Stop and just think about that. You know, if you only wrote for money. See? Capitalism fouls things up. Continue, please.
Well, let's see. One more thing I wanted to tell everybody. When Lover was shut down in 2012...
Which was long after most other internet radio stations folded up because the government had passed the regulations about internet broadcasting trying to limit it and with pretty stiff penalties. And most of the internet broadcasters at the time, to avoid any trouble, they just packed up shop right away. Frank said, well, I'm going to keep going until they catch me. And we did it for, you know, 13 years before they finally caught us, which was, you know, the way Frank did stuff.
Wait a minute. Now, let's be clear here now. Hold on now, Lexi. I mean, come on. Caught us doing what? Caught us broadcasting.
Right.
Caught us sharing music
not
with people. Caught us not following their rules. And what were these rules? And this is where it gets ugly, because we're dealing with this problem too. Okay? Are we for copyrights for artists? Of course we are. Artists should be paid by the companies that they deal with so that they can make a living. All right, no problem. Well, how does that play out? If you know the history of this country in music, it's clear. People were gypped. They basically gypped people out of their money repeatedly. It's ugly, right? And so people tend to have a lot of sympathy for artists getting paid. So what the government, knowing this, what they've done is made it more difficult to broadcast. So, for instance, I like to use background music while I talk. I usually put a reggae dub album on, or I like John Coltrane, something like that. Do you know you're supposed to pay somebody somewhere every time you play background music?
Even if you're not making money off of it.
Right. Even if I'm not getting a dime. So, for instance, so what this has boiled into is that Radio for All, which basically plays the role of a hub where you can put your programs on their website, and then anybody else can go to that website and play your program. That's how Slave Revolt became popular in England. I don't know that many people. I don't get to go to England that much, so bam.
And Frank put tons of his shows on Radio 4.
All right. Well, guess what? Radio 4 All is in trouble because it's costing them approximately $1,200 per month to pay those fees.
Yeah, and Frank actually never had any problem. Like, he agreed to pay the sharks, as he called them,
BMI,
ASCAP, etc. But when it came in 2012, he got a letter from the record companies, and what they wanted was just you know, unending documentation of every single thing that Lover was doing, everything they were playing, and that was the point. And wanted back money, you know, going back, you know, for everything we'd ever done.
And they wanted control over what could be played and when. They have all these very strict and detailed restrictions about you can only play so many songs by a particular artist in a particular time frame, or so many songs from a particular album in a particular time frame. And Frank was not willing to follow those rules.
So that's when Lover just disappeared overnight.
Yeah.
And Frank said, you know, he woke up the next morning smiling, and he said, he sang, you know, the Kenny Rogers song, "You Gotta Know When to Hold 'Em." Know when to fold 'em. And so then, after a little bit, something popped up called Juke Joint. And Frank always said, you know, we'd come back. And so if you go to jukejointunderground.com, You can hear the same kind of stuff that you might have heard on Lover.
Mysteriously.
JukeJointUnderground.com.
All right.
Well, that's quite interesting. I wish y'all had came earlier because I want to. This is getting kind of good to me. But okay. I tell you what. Why don't we right now, because we've got DJ Adversary here waiting patiently, why don't we... You give us one more piece, one more nice poem, and then we're going to see, you know, we're going to cede him the microphone because this is on his time. And I just appreciate his patience, but this is his time.
A short piece?
Yeah.
Do you want to do this or this? Eric, I'll read one.
Deep love. Deep love can be defined as treat the other as yourself. Love the other as yourself, because the other is in fact yourself. It's part of your body. So what you do to, with, for the other, you are doing to yourself within the point of action of now. Deep love goes back to the pre-shamanistic personal awareness of the land, the plants and the animals, and the others in the tribe, and in fact the whole physical existence as parts of the personal body, and hence within personal responsibility.
I don't get that one. Well, I mean, I'm because you know the other ones are bam. Okay, well, you know what? That's the whole point about the, you know, really appreciating art is that no one's going to comprehend everything, you know. But I do want to repeat.
The book then?
Yes.
Here you go.
Okay, can I have a couple of these, please?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so once again, I'm closing out with this, and DJ Adversary is his own self person. He gonna handle it. Frankly Speaking is the name of the event. It will be a book party and celebration of the life and work of the iconic Bay Area cultural pioneer and world-known radical shaman, performance artist Frank Moore. And that's a lot to say, but it's a lot to say because he did a lot. Come and get turned on by words, ideas, concepts, expanding beyond the normal frames of art, performance, sex, magic, and life in general. 300 pages of mind-blowing shit. Thursday, March 27th, 2014, from 7 to 9, it's absolutely free at Modern Times Bookstore. So that's in San Francisco, the address, because it has changed, so please listen up. 2919 24th Street in San Francisco, between Florida and Alabama Street. So you get off of the BART, and you walk towards, would that be westward?
Yeah. You'd be walking east.
It's actually east because San Francisco is a little bit of a peninsula. Okay.
You're walking toward Potrero.
Yes, you would. Okay. So it's not that far now. It's about 4 blocks, eh?
That's right.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. But it's not right on the avenue like it used to be before. So you really have to make a little effort, you know. San Francisco is changing for the worse, in my opinion. It's becoming impossible, almost, to find a place where you can afford to live. Rents are crazy high, you know. But you're going to have one bright, shining moment in San Francisco, March 27th. That's this month, from 7 to 9, at Modern Times Bookstore. Okay, so I'm going to... I'm gonna cede the seat. We're gonna get my man DJ Adversary in here. I appreciate his his patience and love. Let me carry on here past my time. And I'm just hoping that people come and check out this Frankly Speaking book party.
Okay, this is our DJ emissary. After a period of absence, first my key wouldn't work because I guess there was some kind of somebody messed with the front door. And then, because I've been having to clean my room, so my landlord wouldn't evict me from, because you don't want to get evicted in Berkeley because you may never get another spot in Berkeley. So I proceeded to lose my keys. So I've been basically effectively locked out of my own show for the last couple of weeks. So let's see. Today is International Women's Day. So I don't know. We may do some stuff on that theme. We just heard from about Frank Moore, who I went to several of his performances. Starting in the I don't know, it's 1978 Outrageous Beauty Review. This guy in a wheelchair, and there was this kinky nurse beating on him, and I'm like, God, isn't it? I just kept looking at it, and it just got more and more outrageous, you know? It's like, I can't believe they're doing all this stuff right there at the Mubehe Gardens. I was definitely involved with the Explicit Players, which was Debbie Moore, who kind of her and Nina, who was our kinky nurse, it turns out. They kind of did their own thing. First with Best Breast Freedom, and then kind of got naked outside. So Frank was more into like, well, that's probably going to bring too much heat down or whatever. frankly, a lot of the Explicit Player stuff that I liked was the stuff that we did indoors, you know, some of the stuff like at Ashkenaz. I definitely went to some of Frank's stuff. I used to kid him, even though he ran for president, because people wanted me to run for president, because I'd run into people like, what were you doing with all those naked women? Always having a good time. And of course, he ran for president. That didn't stop him from running. So, he certainly had an interesting platform. He had the best platform of any of the candidates. You got something you may be appropriate there?
Sure, I can read the platform.
Sure, read the platform since we just mentioned it. It's a good one.
this is actually also in the book, Frankly Speaking, Platform for Frank Moore's Presidency 2008. I Get Results is the tagline. I'll do away with welfare and Social Security. Instead, every American will receive a minimum income of $1,000 a month. This amount will be tied to the cost of living and will not be taxable. We will have universal prenatal to the grave health care and universal free education with equal access. I'll do away with all tax deductions for over $12,000 income. Instead, there will be a flat tax of 10% on annual income of less than $1 million. Can you get the...
Okay, slight break in the platform. Here it comes back.
Instead, there will be a flat tax of 10% on annual income of less than $1 million for an individual and less than $5 million for a corporation. But the flat tax will jump to 75% on annual income exceeding these limits. I'll cut the military budget by at least half. Public mass transit will be free 24/7 and reliable. All patents and copyrights will expire in 20 years. Inventions, products, etc., which are developed with governmental money and or public institutions, cannot be patented. All businesses selling their products in the U.S. will have to certify that their products were manufactured in accordance with this country's labor, wage, environmental, and safety laws, that they meet or exceed these, no matter where they were produced. Each city and each, quote, media market will have at least two public access channels on radio, broadcast television, cable, and satellite. Election day will be a paid holiday. It goes on. I will. You can stop me anytime. I will push for complete public funding for all political campaigns and the banning of political contributions and the use of personal wealth in political campaigns. The president should have a line veto, but the Congress can overturn this line veto by a simple majority. Also, bills should be limited to 5 pages in length and/or limited to one subject. An individual taxpayer will be able to direct her taxes to what functions she wants to support, but corporate taxpayers should not have this option. Every corporation should come up for a renewal every 25 years, at which time it must prove that it has been operating in the public interest. If it fails to do this, it loses its right to exist. Corporations that have existed before this policy will have 10 years before they will have to prove they are worthy. Government should leave marriage to churches. Instead, any 2 or more adults who have been living together for at least 2 years should be able to register as a, quote, family. The end of hunger, poverty, and discrimination in this nation will be my main focus domestically. This will also shape my foreign policy. The minimum income and the minimum/livable wage linked to the cost of living will rise every time the Congress members vote themselves a pay raise. Will rise by the same percentage of their raise. Education should be federally funded based on the number of students adjusted to special needs of each student in each school district, but schools should be locally controlled. The equal access of education for every student will be ensured by the federal government. I will call for a major rebuilding of America. We will repair our school buildings and will build needed new schools. I will encourage a society of small villages connected by mass transit. Within these small villages, people could walk or bike to work, to school, to shopping, to entertainment, etc. Mass transit will combine these small villages within 15 miles radius into dynamic communities. Living in these villages will end gridlock traffic, cut greenhouse gases, will cut stress and isolation. Housing for all incomes will be included equally in each village. We will encourage electric cars, fast trains, clean, sustainable, decentralized energy generators. I would shut down all nuclear generators. I will destroy 10% of our nuclear weapons each year to reverse the nuclear arms race. We will stop giving/selling arms to other countries. All private arms sales should be illegal. Now, my policies are pro-business. The universal education system will provide business with a superior, flexible workforce. The minimum income and the universal health care will remove the business's burden of providing health insurance and pensions to workers. In reality, this relief will be much more than any tax cut could give. Moreover, the minimum income will make the starting and maintaining a small business much easier. This is also true for small family farms. The minimum income will encourage independent invention and artistic pursuit on which true progress depends. The primary function of the government should be the protection of the health, the civil and human rights, the freedoms, and the general welfare of the people, instead of the protection and the promotion of corporate profits and interests. The government should exist to serve the people, not to make a profit on the services to the people. My administration will be governed by these basic principles. I will bring the troops home from Iraq immediately. Moreover, I will change this country's self-image from that of the superpower world leader to that of a member of the global community. Prisons should be only for violent or otherwise dangerous criminals. Prisons should be a part of the health and educational system and should include drug rehab programs. This should also be true for the new creative in-community programs for nonviolent criminals for paying back rehab and education sentencing. These programs will be more effective and much less expensive and harmful to the community on every level than the current human warehouse system. Flexibility of sentencing should be returned to judges. I will ban the death penalty. The use of drugs should be legalized and taxed. Pot and spirits should be sold over the counter to adults only. Tobacco and other addictive drugs should be sold by prescription only. Free drug rehab programs should be readily available. All of the opt-out schemes should be illegal. If a corporation wants to sell your information, it first should directly and clearly get your permission. Before this happens, all such information is a part of your privacy, not the property of a corporation. The selling/buying of debt should be illegal. Moreover, there should be a maximum interest rate of 10% on the original principal over the lifetime of a loan. I will forgive the loans to the so-called third world countries over the original principal. We will use half of the money we will save by cutting the military budget to pay down the national debt. I will reduce the pollution caused by obscene corporate profits. I will also reduce the federal government while raising services to the people by getting rid of welfare, social security, the so-called war on drugs, etc., and by the cuts in the military, the IRS, prisons, etc. This platform of mine gives you an outline of what we will do together, of what I see this country and the world becoming. It is definitely possible, if we are willing. Yep, it is radical, but it just makes sense, doesn't it? Frank Moore.
All right, there's a platform you can vote for. Or I guess you can't anymore because Frank's, but, you know, we can be inspired by all that. So one of the things that Frank was about was, because, you know, people see him as disabled, is to turn your disability into a strength, which is something our, in the mental, because this show, Liberation of the Wretched, is about, one of the main focuses is on mental disability and using, and not from a perspective of like, yeah, we need to conform with the general sickness of society, because Frank certainly wasn't about that. So, you know, taking our... I'm trying to think of what the Icarus Practice talks about, you know, about considering those as gifts, you know, because they change your perception of things, because you can't operate in the normal sort of way, you know, or so it gives you a different way of looking at things. Or he certainly lived, I would say he lived the life that he wanted to. Nothing was stopping him. He had certain things that he enjoyed, and he certainly was a person that enjoyed life. Had a major impact on a lot of everybody he touched, pretty much. Some people couldn't deal with it. I saw people coming to the performance and like the performances he would did. You know, he was a shaman, you know. He definitely was testing where you were at, trying to see if you could go a little further, which was kind of an enjoyable sort of thing. So we'll miss him. So, yeah, go to that thing that's coming up. When is it again?
It's Thursday, March 27th, 7 to 9 p.m. At Modern Times Bookstore Collective in San Francisco on 24th Street.
All right, so one of the things I also shared with Frank Moore was our, you know, I mean, he talked about erotic, because I did a lot of erotic art. And then okay, as I became more of an activist, I had to kind of walk away from it because it wasn't considered politically correct. And certain people were like, how can you hang out with Frank Moore? He says, this is International Women's Day. But, you know, I was like, you know, the same thing with me. It's like the women that are posing for me, they're not, I'm not forcing them to. I couldn't get the time to do all the ones that they wanted to do. You know, I definitely know that there were definitely people that, there were women that participated in what he was doing and certainly seemed to be enjoying themselves. So I don't see, but you know, this is one of the things I've been, you know, seeing. I mean, there seems to be, in the feminist movement, there seems to be a pro-sexual movement going on, which is fortunate to see. It seems like right now there's an embracing of all sorts of alternate sexualities, which is good for us that don't want to be in those boxes. So, got any comments on that or something from Frank?
Well, Frank explored what he called an expanded sexuality, and he made up words to describe what didn't really have words to describe it beforehand. For instance, he made up a word called aeroplay. And because he had been experimenting in performance and private performance with physical play that was, you know, not sex, but also not limited by the normal limitations and sort of social constraints that people usually put on physicality between adults. So I could actually read a little bit from his piece called Aeroplay, which is in Frankly Speaking also. It was first published in the Drama Review in 1989. So this is kind of coming into the middle of a description of the course of his work. He in the late 70s, he had a group of people formed around a workshop he did, and they ended up doing a weekly cabaret show called the Outrageous Beauty Review at the Mabuhay Gardens, which was the sort of the punk mecca at the time. And so he talks about how I experimented in using the excited, aroused, pleasurable energy in the context of art, of playing, relationship building, not the context of sex. This research reached a climax in my Berkeley workshop during the years of the Outrageous Beauty Review. It was fairly clear to 30 of us that there was a difference between playing and sex. We saw it had something to do with sex and, quote, marriage. The word marriage is another word that has negative connotations hidden within it. So we decided to commit ourselves to having sex only with those to whom we were married, but we erotically played, for lack of a better term for it, with all of the people in the group. The erotic play got wackier, more physical. It gave us a greater freedom, not only within our group, but in society in general as well. Erotic playing intensely but playfully released creativity, which we used in many ways. Successful businesses were established. We did several public performances and a wealth of private performances. There was no jealousy or possessiveness because it was clear that sex would not be involved. This went on for 3 years. At a certain point, we started questioning the concept of marriage. We did not see any difference between what we 30 had together and being married. Not seeing any difference between marriage and what we had as a group, the next logical question was, why not have sex? So we started to have sex outside marriage, within the group. Almost immediately, changes appeared in the group. Jealousy and possessiveness appeared. The group quickly began to fall apart. After this breakup, I focused my work on defining the unique physical, spiritual energy we had used, formalized it in my art to tap again into the intense, pure play with people, using the resulting creativeness in art without being derailed by sex. I realized that one of the things that was undermining my work was the English language. There was no word, no name, for the force I was dealing with. My first task was to create a new word, aeroplay. Our mind needs labels. There is such a force or energy which I have labeled aeroplay, but there has not been a word for it. The word sex has been the dump for everything sensual, romantic, physical, or for showing more skin than usual. Cars are called sexy. Poses that do not show the sex act are called sexual. Wearing certain things, moving certain ways are all called sexual, even when it is not leading to the sexual act, even when there is no intent to have sex. Aeroplay is intense physical playing and touching of oneself and others. Aeroplay is the force or energy released by such play. It is also the happy, playful attitude towards life that comes from such play. Aeroplay is not foreplay, even though foreplay is aeroplay. Foreplay leads to orgasm. Aeroplay leads to being turned on in many different ways and in all parts of the body, including but not limited to physical arousal. It can be different every time. Skin touching skin seems to be what releases the full impact of aeroplay. Aeroplay can be intense. It is like when you rub a puppy on its belly and the puppy goes into a state of rapture, both totally turned on and relaxed. Aeroplay is the blissed out, warm, relaxed, turned on, totally satisfying feeling of a good head rub. Aeroplay is fun. Aeroplay is innocent and childlike. Aeroplay's focus is on physical enjoyment. Aeroplay decreases isolation and alienation. It increases self-trust and trusting of others. It makes you harder to be controlled. Aeroplay leads to a lifestyle with all these characteristics. The lifestyle looks strangely like the Love Generation, but without drugs or free sex. In recent years, outside forces have affected my work. Edwin Meese's political war of sexual suppression and the blandness of yuppies have given my art social issues against which I can do battle. But it is AIDS that has started people searching for non-sexual ways to find, to show, and to give physical intimacy. Aeroplay is a safe, fun, lusty channel for free physical touching. It is safe because there is no physical intercourse. It is not an avoidance, as celibacy is. It is not something second rate. Aeroplay is satisfying in itself. I have debated with myself about no longer resisting the label sexual. By insisting what I am doing is not sexual, I am opening myself to people questioning my honesty and integrity. If I accept the sexual label, people would just have to decide whether or not they like sex in art, decide whether it is art or not. That would be the depth of the questioning. They may feel uncomfortable seeing sex as art, but that uncomfortableness would be just from breaking the taboo of sex. What's the big deal? What I am doing is taking nudity and acts that are usually considered sexual and giving them a new, non-sexual context. That creates a tension, a conflict, an examining, a leap into something new. That is what I am after. This leap into newness is why people who are normally comfortable with casual nudity and casual sex sometimes get very uncomfortable with the nudity and aeroplay in my work. By taking, quote, sexual acts and sincerely putting them into a different context, I create another reality, another way of relating. I also create conflict with the normal reality. And that conflict may change, in an underground sort of a way, the normal reality. I think art, or at least this kind of art, should create conflict and change. And I like relating with people in this, quote, unnormal way. This is why I do performance.
All right. There you go. There's a radical philosophy right there. You can all practice it. But Frank, we certainly made it easier because it is kind of a revolutionary way of looking at things. And it definitely, it's challenging. Because when I first got, because it's like, isn't that, because I define sexual in a very broad sort of way, that, you know, like libido or chi, they're releasing energy. And a certain amount, I was like, oh, this kind of looks like white tantra, which is definitely the tantra that doesn't involve, you know, sexual intercourse. So that was a big part of what he was about. So I'm glad you just read that. So either one of you two want to comment on that? Or you just want to leave Frank's comment on it? It's kind of hard to top. Yeah, okay. So he had a different concept about marriage, didn't he? There was some kind of group marriage going on at some point? Or is it, how did he see marriage?
He ended up shying away from the word and the concept of marriage. I mean, he was all about committed relationships, but he didn't kind of stayed away from the concept of marriage because it intrinsically, like in the word, I guess, and just in the way people conceive of it, it seems to always carry ownership with it, and you know, it doesn't fit in a human relationship. So, but I mean, he was all about, you know, commitments. He and Linda were together for 38 years, and all of us were together with him, you know, 20 years. So he was definitely all about long-term and commitment, but the concept of marriage didn't really fit with how we lived.
And he also, you know, he explored aeroplay, but he also, in his work, he explored many states of physical states. So it was very deep work that he did with his students and in private performance. And I don't know, I mean, there's another piece that kind of goes through. He invented a bunch of other words for other physical states. Maybe Erica could read that one.
Tampan defined. Someone asked me, what is tampan? To answer, I had to first describe some of the other physical trances of play. Aeroplay is intense, non-linear, physical touching, rubbing, licking, exploring for physical pleasure for its own sake. Aeroplay is foreplay that is released from the linear goals of reaching genital orgasm. Tansex is another state of physical trance play. As in aeroplay, there is no genital intercourse. However, they may be orgasms in tansex. But the orgasms in tan sex is not the linear goal peak quality it has in sex. Pan-tan combines various kinds of orgasm, explosions of energy, with entones, a regular implosion of energy, within an intensely small, intimate, non-linear play. These explosions and implosions feed on one another, creating a sustainable state of enjoyable pleasure. The sustainable state of pantan can become the context of your whole life. Pantan is the state of turn-on, aroused enjoyment of life and of being together. Within pantan, creativity, inspiration, and a sense of awe and newness, etc., always are at work. The shaman works with these altered states of physical trance, without the limits of morals, for different magical non-linear change in the totally different non-individualistic context than the normal cultural context. We will call this context tampan. With tampan, all of the aspects of the physical play/trance, including that of intercourse, are drained of both their normal and hidden meanings and qualities so that they can be used by the magic through the shaman to effect both local and non-local changes. These physical trance rituals of tampan are magical rather than personal, even though they have a personal root within them and will powerfully affect personal relationships, such as tampan is dangerous and should be done with respect. Outside of romance, social, and glamour, tampanic trances arouse the state of tampan to the surface of being. Then she asks if nudity was tampanic. In itself, nudity is not tampanic. When the social charge of distortion is removed from nudity, nudity by itself isn't even particularly erotic. It is enjoyable. It is easier to call forth the tampanic trances when nude, but nudity is, or should be, just a part of everyday life.
Okay. So there's a lot of art they want out. Those flyers, this guy, Mike, the artist, so, you know. So that's always been part of his art was always very interesting, so I don't know if you're going to show that, but you know, it seems like the three of you are together. So are you still hanging out with Mike?
Yeah, the five of us, Linda and Mikey lived with Frank, and we, the three of us, live in a house on the same block. And the five of us now, Linda, Mikey, Alexi, Erica, and I, all are still together. And yeah, so we're one. One body, one tribe together.
Still making flyers and stuff.
Yeah, Mikey is still doing art. There's a lot of new Labash art in this book, frankly speaking. One of the pieces in this book is called The Inner Maze, which was a novel that Frank wrote. It was a collaboration that Frank did with his word prediction software on his computer. And basically, when he would type a letter, it would give him a choice of words that would start with that letter. And generally what he would do is to find the word he wanted is he'd keep typing till he got the choice he wanted, and then he'd pick that. But with this novel called The Inner Maze, he would just pick the first word that it gave him. And so it's very surreal, very... It's, you know, you definitely hear Frank in there, but it's very surreal and sometimes very non-linear. So in The Inner Maze, in this book, there's a lot of new Labash drawings, which are really great, and they feature a suspended Frank Moore head in a lot of them, which are just really good, really nice drawings. So Mikey is still doing a lot of art, and he's a graphic designer as well, and very reasonable and very good. Mikey's art will be there at this event too. And so, yeah. And we are also working on a biography of Frank and a documentary. You know, we've kind of reached out to people who knew and worked with Frank and experienced Frank in various ways to talk about their experiences with Frank for this book.
Okay, so there's performances where he brought music in, which sometimes they get pretty experimental. So that was obviously another surreal way that it explored stuff. So are you going to put some music into the event?
Actually, we are. Frank often had what he called his band at the live performances. And Tomek and the Archives are two of the guys who were most often the band, especially toward the later years, up until Frank passed away. So the two of them are going to be there, and they're going to be doing a sort of a ongoing musical track to this event. So it should be great. So yeah.
All right, I'm not sure what more to say. But I wanted to take advantage of at least to, you know, explore it. Since you're here, and I was really interested in what Frank Moore is saying. So, and since this is for those people in West Oakland, this is Illegal Dangerous Radio. It's still called Berkeley Liberation Radio. Just you never know, we might be Berkeley at some point, but we're in West Oakland somewhere on 7th Street. Not reaching about 8 blocks, so you're a special crew if you're hearing this. We were off air totally, so for a while, which is internet, because I was one of the founders of the station, so this is particularly important that we got on air. I guess there's internet radio. I know because you guys did the internet radio, and you had at some point, I was told you had like a million people listening in. Was that exaggerated?
Frank, what were you going
to
say?
No, I was going to say, Frank never liked to... He knew how many people listened, but he never liked to give those numbers out. Never gave them out, because he wanted the people that did the shows or submitted their music to do it just for the love of doing it, and not to be focused on how many people were listening and try to focus on how to get more. So, but he did say at one point that in the course of a year there were over a million hits to the website for Love Underground Visionary Revolution. That's as much as he would release.
Yeah, when Frank first got into internet radio, he was invited to do a show on a you know, real new. It was a new thing at that time, 1998. It was called Fake Radio, and that was really what led to him starting Lover, because, you know, DJs were not doing their shows. They were looking to see if there was anyone listening, and then if there wasn't anybody listening, they just didn't do their show. And Frank kind of raised hell. He said, this is not the way that you do radio. You know, you do it for the love of it, and it shouldn't matter if anybody's listening. And it was one of the many things that he raised publicly with the station, and they didn't like that. They didn't like the muckraking aspect of Frank, and they ended up saying, why don't you just start your own station? So a week later, Lover was going. And but Frank never gave the numbers. Like Alexi said, it was about the love of doing it for doing it. And but he loved playing with numbers. He wrote a thing, and there's a piece in this book called the Numbers Game, and he just, you know, it's about how people focus on reaching, you know, mass quantities of people, thinking that's the way to affect change, and going through mass channels to reach people and to affect change. And his point was that you actually affect a lot of people, and many more people, through underground channels and through, you know, the low tech and personal media. And so, you know, at the end of this piece, you know, which he goes through, you know, all the different aspects of his work, print and you know, radio, TV, and he shows up in movies from time to time, and he ends up with 201,173,000 indirectly reached. And, you know, and it's like, and he's very conservative too, and this was actually before this didn't include numbers from when Frank started putting up videos on Vimeo, which is, you know, started in 2012, and since then there's been 801,000 total plays of his videos. So, you know, and all of this is with Frank never trying to become, you know, a mass media person, and just always staying underground. He thought it was important to stay underground. Like this.
Okay, so I guess I'm going to move to wrap up. So what are your plans after the 27th, the five of you?
After the 27th?
What, are you going to need more performance stuff, or are you going to try to carry on to that, or what's your plans?
Well, as Linda said recently, we don't know in terms of performances. If she were a betting person, she wouldn't bet against it. But there's no plans right now. Yeah. And, you know, definitely we're working on the biography, the documentary. We're going to do a collection of Frank's poetry because he's released several books of poetry, but there's more, and we're going to do that. So who knows?